Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast where I, your host, Scott McNulty, talk about a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. My guest for this episode is Katie Floyd. Katie, thank you for joining me.
It's my pleasure, Scott. Thank you so much for having me.
Many people, I will tell you, have suggested that I have you on because you are a well-known Star Trek fan.
I have a bit of a reputation, yes.
And so finally, I was able to get you on. I say finally because I got around to asking you. You very graciously accepted very quickly, so thank you for that.
I heard you had Max Sparky on last week, so I have to come on and set the record straight now.
That's right.
I'm sure that was just... I haven't heard it yet, but I'm sure it was just a total disaster.
It was... don't tell David this, but possibly the worst episode.
I'm sure he did a good job.
So how might people know you, Katie?
People probably most know me from the podcast that David and I do together, Mac Power Users. So that's over at macpowerusers.com. And I'm also just kind of around the internet. You can find me over at katiefloyd.me or on Twitter. I'm just Katie Floyd, very creative.
You've locked in on your usernames early to get Katie Floyd.
I did, yes. I register everything I can.
That's what I do.
Unfortunately, not the .com, though.
I don't use my name. I use Blank Baby, but I want to be Blank Baby on everything. So whenever some new service comes up, I sign up immediately just so I can get Blank Baby.
Yep. I get it. I did too.
It's a disease. So I've already established that you are known as a Star Trek fan.
Yes.
So I'm never going to – I usually ask people if they consider themselves a Star Trek fan, but we know that you do consider yourself a Star Trek fan. So tell me, how did you get introduced to Star Trek?
You know, I have watched Star Trek as far back as I can remember. It has been a part of my life and probably some of my earliest memories. I mean, probably age 3, 4, 5, if you go back that far. I remember the original series of Star Trek, and this may have been around the time that Next Gen was starting up. It could have even been before Next Gen started up. But the original series was in syndication. I was not alive when the original series was on, but the original series was in syndication. And it was always kind of that show that was on around the 4 or the 5 o'clock block. And that was, I think it was the 5 o'clock block. And that was right around the time where, you know, I was home. It was after school. My mom was just getting home from work. So the person who was watching us was leaving. And it was kind of that down hour that I had while my mom was getting home and she was, you know, coming in and getting dinner ready. And so it was the hour that we just kind of vegged in front of the TV. And Star Trek was an easy thing to watch because it was, you know, family friendly, and we knew that I could watch it, and I was just very engaged by watching it. It was a little bit hokey, but you know, it was entertaining. And then, you know, as I was coming up, and but yet still fairly young. I mean, I remember I was probably the only kid in, you know, probably at late elementary school, middle school, who was a Trekkie, and you know, probably endlessly got teased because, especially being a girl, and girls aren't supposed to like science and science fiction and things like that. But you know, I remember being in middle school, you know, when you had silent reading days, I was reading, you know, Star Trek novels, because at that point, you know, the Next Generation was starting up and Star Trek was being, you know, reinvigorated. And so I remember you know, growing up with the Next Generation. I didn't get to watch it live because my parents were very mean and made me go to bed. And so, you know, they would tape it for me. And so I think it came on Thursday nights at 10. And so Fridays when I got home from school, my dad would tape the Next Gen for me, and I would get to watch it Fridays when I got home from school.
Well, that's a good father taping the Next Generation for you.
Yeah.
So you mentioned the books. Do you have a particular novel that you remember fondly? Because I know a lot of people have suggested that I should do a random track all about the novels, and I talked to a couple of guests previously about the novels, so I wonder if any stick out in your mind.
You know, I don't know that any do, because I remember that I was reading the novels quite voraciously when I was in middle school. And we recently, you know, it's funny how things come full circle. My brother, who's several years younger than me, is now a teacher at the middle school that he and I both went to. And my mom pulled out this huge Tupperware bin, because you know you can get those big storage bins, that is full of Star Trek novels that I read. And then, you know, younger siblings tend to follow in the steps of their older siblings that he read. And my brother hated reading, but we found that he liked reading these Star Trek novels because he liked Star Trek too. And so my mom found it was just a wonderful way to encourage him to read. And we just recently donated all those books to his classroom. And now his students, who probably don't have much interaction with Star Trek, are enjoying reading those. So I get a great thrill out of that. I mean, it's probably, you know, somewhere between 50 and 75 books.
That's fantastic. I have told the story of there was a summer in my youth where I visited my friend, and I noticed in his den, high tucked in the corner, were probably 20 of his father's Star Trek books. And I was just like, what? They make Star Trek books? Because I was, by then, a dyed-in-the-wool Star Trek fan. But for some reason, it never occurred to me that there might be novels. And I spent that whole summer just reading those books.
And part of me thinks it may be cool to have those now. The reality is I'm never going to read them again. But I think they're put to much better use now. If they can encourage kids who don't like to read to start reading, I mean, that's a much better use than them, you know, taking up desk space on my bookshelf.
Right, and just so you can have a fond memento.
Right.
So the books, you've read the books. You grew up kind of watching the original series and then the Next Generation.
I watched them all, the original series, the Next Gen, and Deep Space Nine, although I must admit, I did not watch Enterprise.
See, I am much the same way. I watched the first season of Enterprise, and we're going to talk about an Enterprise episode, as everyone knows already who's downloaded this podcast. But I stopped because I didn't really like it.
Yeah, me too. I didn't avoid them. I probably watched the first couple of episodes, but Enterprise came along. I think it was 2001 to 2005. Mm-hmm. It was after I was in college. It was when I was in law school. I was very busy. And I didn't like it. I had a lot of aversion to Enterprise. And in retrospect, this is probably a silly thing to say. I had a lot of the same aversion to Enterprise that I initially did to the reboot of Star Trek that J.J. Abrams did. And, you know, Gene Roddenberry had died. Mm-hmm. And I felt like this is not right. You know, Voyager had just ended. And I know that you typically ask this, so I'll jump the shark a little bit and tell you that, you know, I admit that the Next Generation is probably the best of the Star Trek series, but Voyager was really my series. I mean, if I had to pick a favorite, Voyager would probably be it. And Voyager ended in 2001. And I was kind of at a lull, and, you know, Enterprise started up in 2001, and it was just such a downer. And I watched a couple of episodes, and it wasn't something that I avoided, but I just, if it was on, I'd watch it, and I wouldn't go out of my way to watch it. And I felt that this is not Gene Roddenberry Star Trek. This is not Star Trek. This isn't real. Obviously, none of Star Trek is real. I get that. I'm not delusional. But, you know, this is not the way the story happens. The story happens where the first Enterprise is Kirk's Enterprise that he got from mm-hmm. Captain Pike. There's not an NX-01. This is not canon. This is not Star Trek. And I just had this sour taste in my mouth about it from the beginning. And I really also felt that way about the reboot of Star Trek. You know, when they diverged the timeline and spoiler alert, they blew up Vulcan. And I'm like, what? This is not my Star Trek. I walked out of the original, not the original, but the Star Trek reboot movie upset. I was just like, I'm not watching this. I don't know what they're doing. This is not my Star Trek. And then I came around and I was having a pretty tough time personally in 2008 or so, and I got the Enterprise DVDs. You know, Netflix was pretty popular then. Streaming services weren't quite as popular in 2008 as they are now, but Netflix was sending out the DVDs, and I said, well, I needed something, and I said, well, let me go back, and I got the DVDs from Netflix, and I started kind of binge watching it, and I kind of came to the same conclusion about Enterprise as I ultimately did about the Star Trek reboot, which I really enjoy now, is that I came to the conclusion that, you know, the world is just, my world is a better place with Star Trek in it, in whatever form that it may be, mm-hmm. than it is without it. And so now I accept that, you know, the rebooted movies are great. I can enjoy them as entertaining and accept that it's not my Star Trek. It's an alternate universe. I still hope they fix the timeline before they're done with it, but we'll see.
Well, see, I had a very similar reaction when I found out that, you know, when Enterprise was first coming on. I was excited because, hey, new Star Trek, hooray. But then when I found out they were going to set it before the original series, I was like, what? Why are you doing this to me? This seems wrong on many levels.
Right.
And it also seems like a big challenge for the show itself, right? Because, and I've talked about this before, I think that Enterprise does a lot of things right, especially kind of set design and, you know, how it looks. But that is like a really high bar of difficulty to get it to look right when you're supposed to, as a viewer, think, okay, this is before the original series, so it can't look too good. But, of course, they've had, you know, 40 or 50 years of special effects and high-definition cameras and all this kind of stuff. So it has to look a certain level because it's a modern TV show. But then it can't be too far beyond what the original series is or else it's ridiculous.
Right.
So yeah. I thought it was an interesting choice. I never went back to watch it. So now I have a whole bunch of Enterprise episodes I've never seen, which is kind of nice because I can be like, oh, look, there's Star Trek episodes I haven't seen.
But you're watching them randomly.
I am watching them randomly, which is why I am not going back to watch them in order because they eventually they'll come up.
Okay.
I have.
Well, especially, I'm sure as people have told you, especially towards the end of the series, you get into more story arcs in Enterprise,
right. Mm-hmm.
which if you don't watch them in order, you'll miss. So.
Well, that is true. I know I have watched some of the temporal Cold War stuff, so I know that's happening at some point in maybe two or three or four, season five. I don't know, whatever. It'll come up.
Yeah, because this is a season two episode that we're talking about, mid-season two. Yeah.
We're going to be talking about The Catwalk, which is season two, episode 12. And I just want to talk about the movie, the reboot movie, very briefly. You see, I did not have the same problem that I had with Enterprise as I did with the reboot movie, because I thought it was very clever of J.J. Abrams to basically say, okay, we're going to start off kind of in the same universe, right, that you know, and then we're going to clearly split. And, you know, Spock is going to come, and then it's a different, and then, you know, that kind of proves that this is a different timeline. So all the Star Trek that you know and love still exists, and this is like a new timeline where we can play with your Star Trek toys and do other things and blow up planets, and it doesn't affect all the other canon, which I thought was a neat trick.
Yeah, and I thought the second movie was I enjoyed the second movie as well. I thought it was a little tongue-in-cheek, though. I'm like, really? We're really going to repeat the last scene and just switch the roles? Spoiler alert, switch the roles, but okay.
This whole podcast is spoilers, so no. Yeah, I thought to myself, you probably could have worked a little harder on that second movie. I mean, I liked it.
But it was also kind of endearing as well. I'm like, oh, no, they didn't. Oh, yep, they are. Here we go.
But then the problem with that is it makes me compare that movie to The Wrath of Khan. And
which is just... I go back and forth depending on my mood, whether The Wrath of Khan or The Voyage Home is my favorite Star Trek movie of all time, because they're very different movies, but they're both wonderful movies.
Yes, and I think The Wrath of Khan may be one of my favorite movies, period. Not even
Star Trek. I agree. Yes.
I think it's just a fantastic, and I like Voyage Home a lot as well. But I think, you know, any movie, well, almost any movie compared to The Wrath of Khan is a tough comparison, I think. So having a Star Trek movie that is so closely related to The Wrath of Khan and comparing it, it's going to suffer. Although The Wrath of Khan did not have RoboCop in it, so that's a plus for Into Darkness.
Yeah.
But speaking of RoboCop, which is not a segue at all, let's talk about this episode of Enterprise, which is called Catwalk, which I must say... I have said a lot of bad things about Enterprise. I think it is my least favorite Star Trek series. And this episode does not help prove that wrong, frankly.
I thought this episode was fine, but yes. I think that is what was wrong with Enterprise, is that even their good episodes were just fine. You know, and even Next Gen and Voyager and all of those series, they had episodes that were just fine. And it's okay to have episodes that are just fine. In fact, sometimes it was like palate cleansing every now and then to have an episode that was just fine. And I kind of liked those, you know, we're just going to stay on the ship and show you a little bit of the behind the scenes of the ship episodes. But that was kind of the problem with Enterprise, is that they never got beyond the it's just fine stage.
Yeah, this episode, I mean, there's nothing technically wrong with it, and it's not bad by any stretch of the imagination, but I thought, I was hoping, I keep hope open that I'm going to find an exciting episode of Enterprise, and I know they exist. The Mirror Mirror episode, in particular, I liked. But this episode... I will say this. I watched it on the Blu-ray, and the Blu-ray has a super exciting menu system.
Oh, there you go.
Which is great. And then I watched this episode, and it wasn't as exciting as the menu system, which is never a good thing when you're a TV show and you're competing with your own Blu-ray menu system that is better, more entertaining. And so I'm going to recap this episode very quickly because not a lot happens, really. Mm-mm. And then we can talk about, there's some interesting things, but it is not, it's a very straightforward episode. So the Enterprise is orbiting a planet that has two suns. It's like a paradise. Everyone's excited to go down, but oh no, an alien ship hails them and says, hey, you need to beam us aboard. And they're like, why? And there's apparently a giant radioactive warp speed storm coming across the galaxy or something.
This giant catastrophic thing is coming and your sensors haven't picked it up yet.
Exactly. And then they're like, well, we don't see it. And they're like, well, give it time. And then 30 seconds later, oh, we see it.
Yeah. Oh, look, there it is.
Oh, well, we should probably. And here's my main problem with this episode. And I know that, you know, you need to have some plot elements and you need to push it forward, even if it doesn't make any sense. But I think this episode could have been much better. They were orbiting a planet, right? This planet has an atmosphere that they, because they were talking about how they're going to have fun down in the planet. And,
yeah, let's go down into the atmosphere.
Exactly.
Let's weather it on the planet. Let's land. But no.
That is the clearly the most logical solution to this. We go down to this paradise planet. We weather it out. Maybe we leave a skeleton crew on the
Enterprise. Do a little rafting in the Grand Canyon. Yeah.
Exactly. But then you could make the episode even better. I think they probably just wanted to save money. But you could, I think it would have been a better episode if you had split the crew and you have a skeleton crew on the Enterprise and you have everybody else kind of basically stranded on the planet. And they don't know what's, they maybe they can, kind of communicate, but it's tough and they find out, you know, that someone's trying to hijack the Enterprise or something. And there's, some excitement. But that's not what they choose to do.
No. Instead, what they find out is that, oh, this bad radioactive storm is coming, and if we don't do something, everybody's going to die.
Exactly. So the aliens who tell them about the storm say, beam us aboard and then go to warp 7 as fast as you can so we can get.
Problem.
Yeah, and then they're like, oh, well, we can only go to warp 5. So I like that.
Yeah.
And then Dr. Phlox points out that it's full of radiation and the crew members will die in like 3 minutes if they're exposed to it, which seems bad. And so that's the setup for the whole thing. They get the aliens aboard. You know not to trust these aliens. Something's up with them.
The minute they come on board, you just look at what they're wearing and you know you can't trust them.
Yeah, they give some story about being stellar cartographers.
Yeah, those aren't stellar cartographers.
They are not stellar. Although one of them is plays the divorce lawyer on The Good Wife. So
yeah, and I had that in my notes to mention that. Zach Greiner, who is an excellent actor, mm-hmm. I think he has two lines in this episode. He's the one who says, we're stellar cartographers, mm-hmm. and then somewhere else he says something stupid later in the episode. But I'm like, why didn't this guy do something? I mean, he's the quintessential bad guy. Why didn't you give him some lines?
Yeah, I wondered about that because he is really great in The Good Wife and in many villainous roles, but he does nothing in this except right. lie about being a stellar cartographer. But
and he like cooks a frog or something.
Oh, he does. He cooks. I think they're chicken feet.
Okay,
but they don't show it. But that's what when you watch on Blu-ray, you can distinguish these things. And I should point out the Blu-rays look beautiful. It makes me sad that Enterprise has been the most modern Star Trek because it was shot in HD, so it looks fantastic. Sadly, you know, the show itself doesn't live up to how fantastic it looks, but I will stop beating that dead horse.
Yeah.
So, oh no, there's this radioactive storm coming. We need to shelter in place somewhere because we can't beam down to the planet because that makes too much sense. And so Dr. Phlox, who is one of my favorite characters on Enterprise, says, oh, well, we could probably get maybe 30 people into sickbay, which has the best, most shielding, and then everyone else will die.
But yet the animals can't stay there.
Yeah, well, see, that is true. Well, they need Dr. Phlox to feed them, I guess. I don't know.
Okay.
That is how I will write that away.
Yeah.
And so Captain Archer does his Captain Archer thing and says, no, I can't let my crew die. And you think, oh, there's going to be some kind of peril because they'll need to figure out what happens. But Trip immediately comes up with a solution.
Like in 2 seconds. Yes. Oh, I have a solution. No drama there.
And you think to yourself, well, why didn't you say that in the first place? But he doesn't. Apparently, there are catwalks along both nacelles of the Enterprise, and they are the most shielded places on the Enterprise, despite what Dr. Phlox thought. And, you know, they set it up where, oh, T'Pol says, oh, we're going to hide in a crawl space. And so you think to yourself, wow, it's going to be really tight in this catwalk. These catwalks are pretty cavernous.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's not like fantastic to be in there for 6 weeks with a bunch of people, but there's a lot of space.
Yeah, and I thought this was kind of another missed opportunity for a plot twist. I mean, Star Trek has done a lot of the ship is abandoned, and the ship gets abandoned, and someone tries to steal the ship type plots before. And spoiler alert, that's what happens here now. Yeah. But you know, that I thought that would have been another plot twist. You know, they have two catwalks because they have two warp nacelles. You know, the ship is cut off, the crew is cut off. Mm-hmm. I thought it would have been an interesting plot twist. Let's use both of them. You know, let's give T'Pol, who's you know, still kind of learning her way here, and the crew doesn't quite trust her yet. You know, let's put her in command on one of the catwalks and Archer in command on the other, and then kind of that, I thought that would have been a fun, you know, play off of each other. If the catwalks lose communication with each other and one doesn't know what to do with the other, I thought that would have been fun. But now, of course, it's aliens gonna try to steal the ship.
They pack everybody into one catwalk for some reason. Or they pack all the people we care about in one, and everybody else is in the other one. It's unclear.
Yeah, who knows?
including all of Dr. Phlox's animals. And I wrote...
Who can't stay in sickbay.
Exactly. I wrote in my notes, I would really not want to be stationed next to Dr. Phlox and his animals in that space.
Right.
Seems like a bad placement. You know, if you how you rank on Enterprise if you have to sleep next to Dr. Phlox and his cages of weird animals.
Right.
Although Dr. Phlox is very happy there because there are 12 billion people on one continent on his planet. And this is where I thought it was weird because Captain Archer was like, oh, I had no idea that Denoblia had such a high population. And you think to yourself, you have like two aliens on your crew. You should probably know a little bit
about their culture. Take an
interest. Exactly. Yeah. But he doesn't.
No.
And so the one thing I did, there are so many elements of this episode that I thought were good and yet missed opportunities, as is the story of Enterprise, I think. The Trip mentions, oh, we can use these catwalks, but it gets a little hot in there. And you think, oh, well, it'll be a little stuffy. And then he says, well, it's 300 degrees when the warp coil is on. And so he says that, and then, of course, that comes up later. And I thought that was a good kind of, you know, plot device, except they... Once again, they like immediately take care of that. So it really foils the drama of the whole thing. So a lot of the episode is everybody's in cramped quarters. They're getting on each other's nerves, which, you know, I kind of liked to see the interaction between the characters. Malcolm, who's the weapons officer, is really annoyed by being trapped in this space, and he has motion sickness. He gets very snippy with Trip, and he's like, how come you didn't build us a shower, which I thought was weird, but he does say that. And the cook comes and gives pot roast, and Malcolm's upset about the pot roast because they ate pot roast two times before. He's really not enjoying this whole situation.
Yeah, and I thought, you know, again, one of my complaints about Enterprise is they never really, even in four seasons, developed much of the characters. You know, Malcolm's just kind of this stuffy malcontent who's kind of annoying, and and you've got, you know, T'Pol, who's, you know, her thing is, you know, she doesn't quite get along with humans, and they kind of started to explore that a little bit in this episode. You know, they had the line, which I thought had an opportunity to go somewhere at the beginning, where she basically lied, although Vulcans don't lie, said that she didn't recall, or the Vulcan ship that ran into a similar storm earlier was nearly destroyed. Turns out, guess what it was? And then when Archer calls her on it, she said she must have misremembered. Well, clearly she didn't. She was making an effort to make everybody feel better. And, you know, she and Archer get on each other's nerves, but they didn't push that. You know, Trip is Trip, and you know, Mayweather doesn't do anything. He just flies the ship. But this was a good opportunity to be kind of a down episode, and we could learn a little more about the characters, which I thought TNG did so well. And even Voyager, they developed the characters, and Enterprise never really developed the characters.
Yeah, they try. There are a couple scenes in this episode, and I thought they were actually my favorite parts. Like, I liked when T'Pol and Captain Archer are kind of trying to, you know, wind down for the night, and they're both on their iPads, or their pads, I should say. And Captain Archer...
Which do look remarkably like iPads.
They do. Captain Archer, as we all know, loves water polo. And I was watching this episode with my wife, and she was like, why does he like water polo? It's so boring. And I was like, well, I don't know, but it is an established fact that he likes water polo. And he was watching it on his little iPad, and then my wife immediately said, why is he watching that in portrait mode?
Well, so we've established a couple things in this episode. They do not have headphones.
That's
in
right.
The future. They have not developed headphones, nor have they developed mute, because they both get on each other's nerves, because Archer is watching water polo, number one in portrait mode, number two without painful. Headphones. Mm-hmm. And T'Pol is, you know, beeping on her tablet, which has no mute feature.
Yes, and I turned to my wife and I said, "Oh, T'Pol is one of those people that didn't disable the keyboard sounds."
Yes, keyboard clips.
That is the first thing you're supposed to do, I think, with your iPad or your smartphone. Disable that annoying noise whenever you use the virtual keypad. But yeah. T'Pol, she likes it.
Now, I do think we get one of the more interesting dialogues in this episode. Where T'Pol kind of sarcastically says, it's like, it's almost kind of like a camping trip.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, "Perhaps we can all sing songs later." And I really enjoyed that. I was like, that's pretty deadpan. I like that. And then Archer says something like, "Well, haven't you ever gone camping before?" And she says, "In a matter of speaking, I once participated in a ritual where I was taken to the desert and left to survive for 10 days.
And to which Captain Archer responds, "Well, that sounds like fun."
Yes.
Also, I should give props to my favorite member of the Enterprise crew, Porthos. He's very cute in this entire episode. He pops up a few times. So hooray for Porthos.
And we should know that Porthos knows what brace for impact means.
He does. That's right. He runs to his little corner and he braces. He's a very smart dog, that Porthos.
He is.
I do think it's kind of... It tells you a little bit about Captain Archer that he has this little dog with him. And I don't know if that reflects a good thing on his character or not, because it seems like it would be kind of annoying if I were a crew member and I had to, you know, the captain's dog had to be taken care of. But that's another conversation for a different day. Right. So, like Katie, you were saying, this could have been a great opportunity to explore the character relationships, have a little downtime, maybe have some kind of, you know, there's these aliens, so they had a little friction with the aliens. But then at some point, some writer must have said, we really need to action this up. So the warp core or warp something, some warp thing starts bringing itself online because they had to shut everything off to weather the storm. And they call, Captain Archer calls Trip over and he's like, "Hey, what's going on?" And Trip says, "Well, this must be some kind of sensor fluke." And then something else turns on. So it's clearly not a sensor fluke. So he goes off. He dons his little radiation suit, goes off into the empty Enterprise, which I wrote down is creepy. But at this point, Enterprise has had like two other, I don't know, Enterprise has gone to this well of the empty Enterprise a couple times. So maybe another trick should be up their sleeve or something. But it turns out it is not an empty Enterprise because more of the aliens have boarded the Enterprise while everyone is huddled away because they're immune to this radiation and they are planning to steal the Enterprise.
How many times in Star Trek history have people tried to steal the Enterprise?
I know. I really wish they had just dropped this
whole
point.
The only people who have done it successfully have been Kirk and Scotty, I should mention. But
that is true. Because they have the inside line. Yeah, these aliens are... There are many of them, and they are borderline incompetent because they cannot seem to do anything. Now,
nothing works. It looks like it's been rerouted, and it's taking me hours to figure out why.
And they couldn't figure out where the whole crew was. They were like, clearly, this ship is abandoned. these are like the worst pirate hijackers ever.
Right.
And so there's this some action scenes where, you know, Archer's like, "You need to get off my ship," and
which I didn't understand. Why was so then T'Pol and is it Malcolm who go down and T'Pol go down, and then T'Pol and Malcolm are like trying to turn off the engine so people don't fry to a crisp.
Right.
And then I'm not real sure what Archer is doing, but he's like pretending like he's hurt to
I don't know what that was all about. So yeah, Trip comes back. He says, "Oh, there are invaders," and then so they're like, "Oh, they're going to bring the engines back online. We're all going to die," which they deal with very quickly, which I thought would have been a great moment of drama. But it's like 5 minutes and it's done. Trip is like, "Okay, I'll go to engineering and, you know, bring it back offline." And they say, "No, you can't go because you could only be exposed for 23 minutes." And then Archer and T'Pol and Malcolm go, but Archer, I think he is pretending to be like he's been exposed to the radiation for a long time, so he's dying, and he hopes to bluff the aliens off by saying, "You know, I'm dying, my whole crew is dead, So I have
I'm
no
I'm just going to blow up the ship. Yeah. I have nothing left to live for.
Exactly. I'm a crazy man. You cannot negotiate with me because I'm going to die anyway. So I'm going to take you all with me. And there's like a phaser fight in the kitchen for so no
apparent reason. Of course
it's
in the kitchen because why not?
Well, here's my problem with that, right? Throughout the whole episode, this last part is maybe like the last 15 minutes of the episode. But up until that point, there's been lots of turbulence and people are complaining about it. Things are, you know, people are getting knocked over. And in the kitchen, there are like glass jars everywhere and beakers full of stuff. All the pots are perfectly lined up.
Yep.
Nothing has fallen over in the kitchen.
Nope. Everything's fine.
And I was like, what?
This magnets. This is amazing.
You guys, you have to be internally consistent. You do know that super geeks are watching this show, and we notice these things.
Yeah.
But yeah, they have a fight. They have the phasers. Nothing gets knocked over in the fight either, by the way. Except one guy gets, I guess, it's unclear if Archer kills him or stuns him.
Yeah, I think he stuns him. And then in the meantime, Mayweather, like, steers the ship with mm-hmm. Archer's help towards a quantum filament of some kind and is like, no, really, I'm serious. We're gonna blow the ship up. And so the aliens decide they better get off.
Yep. And so they leave.
they play chicken, basically, with the aliens.
They do. And it's such a, like, a letdown, this whole episode. Like, they ramp up the drama a little bit, but then the aliens are just like, all right, fine, we're leaving. And they leave.
They're like, we're done. Goodbye.
There is a funny moment, though, because so, you know, Archer is happy that they're leaving, but T'Pol and Mayweather don't know that they're leaving yet. So T'Pol's like, keep going towards this eddy. And Mayweather's like, are you sure? We're really close. I don't know. And she's like, no, keep on the course. And then Captain Archer talks to them and he's like, I really hope you're not still going towards that eddy because
the aliens
left. I
know, I was
left.
Just like, whatever.
I chuckled, but that was and then it's over.
And then there's movie night.
Oh, that's right. Yes, I made a note about this.
It all ends with movie night and everybody's friends again, and then T'Pol even joins for movie night because this experience has made her a better person. She decides to join the crew for movie night, which they always watch movies that are. You know, by our standards, 50 years old. So by their standards, like 250 years old. I don't know why, but they like old Westerns for movie night. And of course, T'Pol's like, well, clearly this is what the plot of the movie is and spoils the movie for everybody.
And then it's movie night's over. Everybody can go to their quarters.
Right.
And hooray, the episode's over. I did make a note about that. I said, why do they watch super old movies? It doesn't make any sense. Although, I talked about this in another Enterprise movie.
I wonder if it has to do with, like, copyright or something.
That's what I'm thinking. I think Paramount or probably owns whatever movies they show in the movie night, so they don't have to pay anything.
And they didn't want to show at that. I mean, because remember, this all happened between, like, what, 2001 and 2005, so they didn't mm-hmm. want to show semi-current movies, I guess?
I guess. I don't know.
Because that would almost date the series more than like really old movies.
It's true. And I guess they didn't want to waste time like creating fake movies.
Yeah, I guess.
Time and money, I suppose.
Yeah.
So old movies, why not? People watch old movies now. And that's the thing. They let the aliens go. The aliens decide, there's this part where the aliens were not really stellar cartographers. They were part of this militia. They deserted it. There's a tiny tense moment when Archer's like, you're deserters. And you think, ooh, maybe he'll report them because he's a military man. But he doesn't. They leave. So that, I mean, nothing, this episode does nothing to advance anything, really. No characters grow. Nothing happens. It's kind of a waste, I think.
Yep. Well, that's Enterprise. That's the story of Enterprise. But you know what I said? A life with Star Trek is better than a life with no Star Trek.
Yes.
And that's what I ultimately decided when I went back and I started watching it again in 2008 all the way through. So
it does get better. Enterprise mm-hmm. does get better later seasons. Still not great, but it gets better. And this is, I think, having watched a bunch of random episodes of Star Trek, I've said this before, the most fun ones to talk about are the great classic episodes, right? Because they're great mm-hmm. and classic. Or the really bad episodes, because there are lots of really bad episodes of Star Trek. And they're fun to talk about because you list all the bad things that happen, right? This is just kind of a meh episode, right? Not much happens. There's nothing too egregious. It looks fine. It's fine. But Yeah, it's not very exciting.
Yeah. But we still managed to talk about it for almost the length of the episode.
It's true. It's amazing how you could just talk about Star Trek. So I clearly not a fan of this episode. What did you think of this episode, Katie?
Yeah, I probably wouldn't watch it again. I've watched it three times now, once originally and twice for the show, and I'm good. I'm done now.
Yeah, I appreciate you doing that. Now, you said, we were talking before we started recording, you said that this made you go back and watch the season one opener or the series opener?
No, the series. Well, season one opener would have been the series opener for Enterprise, but Broken Bow.
Yeah, with the Klingons and whatnot.
So I just kind of wanted to remember how it all started.
I haven't seen that in forever, so how does that hold up?
Yeah, I kind of remember why I started watching Enterprise and stopped.
So not well, is what you're saying.
Yeah. It's fine.
Oh, poor Enterprise. I wish Enterprise were better. And I feel the problem with Enterprise is, I think what they tried to do was they tried to appeal to non-Star Trek fans, right? So they wanted to make it popular and kind of watered down the Star Trekiness of it. And then when they realized that wasn't working, they tried to ratchet up the Star Trekiness of it. But all the Star Trek fans stopped watching it.
It was too late. It was too late, yeah.
And so,
but have faith. You need to have faith of the heart.
I'm sorry.
I had to reference it.
I did not bring up the theme song.
Yeah, no.
Because I hate it. As I've said before. But I do love, and I will say this, I watched it in Blu-ray, and every time I watch the opening, the opening sequence, and I mute the theme song, I'm struck by how beautiful the opening sequence is.
Yeah.
And how great a job they did with that, at least, because it tells the whole story of, you know, exploration and up to the point of Enterprise. It's fantastic. But then they put on the smooth jazz ballad or whatever it is, and it makes me angry.
Oh. Angry. I agree.
Well, Katie, I think we've probably said more than we should have said about Catwalk at this point. So thank you so much for joining me.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Next on Random Trek, Voyager Season 7, Workforce Part 1 and 2.